everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics podcast, where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics. And my name is Joey Groh. Her name is Heather Antos. And before we get into today's topic, depending on when you're listening to this, we have a micro course that Heather is doing called Kickstarting Your Comic, a Comics Experience micro course, and that is going to be happening on November 9th. So that's Friday, November 9th, 2018, depending on when you're listening to this. And I wanted to mention that right off the top because it's coming up and we haven't talked about it on the show yet, Heather. So this is your background. Folks may not know, they might know you more from Marvel, is indie comics and Kickstarters.
Yeah. Actually, I would have never gotten the job at Marvel if it wasn't for Kickstarter. So, I started my comics career by self-publishing and kickstarting comics. My most notable project is Unlawful Good, an anthology of crime, which at the time was one of Kickstarter's most successful comics projects. It ended up getting me invited to speak at the Kickstarter panel at New York Comic Con in 2014. Which then led to me getting the attention of Marvel. And then later, after I moved out to New York and was working for Marvel, I've been a Kickstarter consultant. I will go in and with the Kickstarter headquarters and speak with creators in the community about kickstarting comics, as well as working with Kickstarter themselves to help build the best platform for comics creators.
Nice. I didn't realize you had that kind of interaction. That's terrific.
Yeah. It's I'm in love with the platform. I think what they offer is like really great for creators, especially in this, you know, in this context of the internet and getting your work out there. And it's totally possible. If I could do it, anyone can do it. And I'm here to share my experience with all y'all.
So you will be telling us things and some amount of interaction with folks asking questions. And it's November 9th again. Go to comicsexperience.com to find out more, or check out Comic Experience on Twitter or Heather Antos on Twitter to kickstarting your comics experience. I think that's right.
I think so. I think that works.
Should have written that out. The topic today is one that has been in the lineup for a bit. In you, I believe, brought it up. It's finding the humanity in superheroes, mm-hmm. which is something that before we started recording, for me, I kind of realized just in hearing you talk about it, that's something that when it's done well, I don't recognize that it's done well. But when it's done poorly, I feel like I'm out of the story and not connecting to the characters. And that's something I don't know that I'd ever kind of verbalized until you brought it up as a topic. And I'm sure as just a reader, you've seen examples of, but in somebody that's in the editing position and in the writing position, that's got to be a constant that's in the background of, well, there's no way into the story. There's no way to connect. And just it's one of those things like, if there were a checklist for comics, the humanity of the characters that you're reading has to be there, or maybe the inhumanity if it's, you know, a certain kind of story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, it's always one of the things that I definitely look out for, is finding the truth in these stories. And that's, you know, that comes from my background, not only as a writer and editor, but also as my background as an actor, because as an actor, you know, it's all about finding truth in the characters. Right. Why I think each of us as individuals connect to the specific characters that we do, it's because we relate to them. We see something of ourselves in them. And, you know, I don't see, one of the characters I always relate to, or I like to talk about in terms of this, is Deadpool. Specifically from Jerry Duggan and Brian Posehn's run of Deadpool. And I don't relate to him in the sense of like, oh yeah, I'm a dude with cancer, you know, that likes to make fart jokes all the time. Like that's, or goes on a killing rampage and can heal from anything. Like that's obviously, I don't relate to that. Right.
Right.
But what I do relate to is this is a dude who is, you know, he's in a lot of pain and a lot of misery and suffering. And he has every right in the world to be angry, every right in the world to be mad. But despite all that, he is trying to do the right thing. And despite failing, he is still getting up. And despite everyone telling him, no, you're a bad guy, you're a villain, he's still trying to be a hero. And he's still trying to do the right thing for his friends, for his family. And I think that's such a beautiful thing. And I think that's such a relatable thing for just, you know, everyday human life in general.
Yeah.
That's why I relate to that story. And that's why I relate to that character is, despite everything and all the struggles and hardships in my life, like I'm still continuously trying to be a better person and trying to do the right thing. So that's my TED talk on why Deadpool is a role model. Everyone.
I think that might be the subtitle for the episode.
but I think it's true. Like I think that, you know, like it's hard to do that. And it's hard to do that with a character, a story like Deadpool in particular, where like people are picking it up because it's funny and violent. So how do you find the humanity in this comedy and violence, but still have it be a truthful story? And that's easier said than done with a lot of these characters.
At a granular level, in thinking about folks that could be listening to this conversation, it's folks that maybe don't have a lot of experience making comics or different phases. Do you feel like this is something that you see at a pitch level, or maybe it's not even a pitch document, about hearing about, hey, here's my take on Deadpool? Is that where it really starts to crystallize, and from there it kind of goes, oh, it's what you said. It's this person who's got a struggle of finding their humanity through, you're a bad guy, you're also should be dying, these are all the things that are wrong in your life. Is there a way that you initially saw like a way into Deadpool, or was this always kind of you just read it and got it?
For me, I just read it and got it for that particular story, because that particular story that I'm talking about is The Good and the Bad and the Ugly, and that was the year before I joined Marvel, when I was kickstarting my comic. But, that's what I got out of that story. And then like, as I begin to like shape this character, that's how I viewed him and everything going forwards. And this is the character that Jerry built. It's not the same Deadpool that, you know, Joe Kelly or Daniel Way did, which again, I think is super cool and unique about comics, being able to do this and have these different takes. But right. I think it depends on the character. It depends on the storyline. Like when Jerry pitched different arcs beyond that, after I was working on that storyline, Jerry always had like this end goal, this arc, for Deadpool. It was never about, it was never about the events and actions that were happening to Deadpool. It was always about his character arc and the journey that he was taking on. And I think like that's what I look for in the pitch, is, you know, like the different events that are happening to these characters are, I think, fairly interchangeable. Especially in comics, when you have, you know, a world-ending event every 6 months, what else is different? What else is new? Come up with something, you know, like
right, right.
you can interchange them. But it's how these characters grow and react to it. Like, that's what I look for. And if I don't see a difference from the beginning of an arc to the end of an arc in a character's journey, then there's something I feel that's missing.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of this might be the same kind of chicken and egg of anything related to storytelling. But you're talking about the reinvention and the something new but something familiar, and just look at characters' histories with a Batman or a Spider-Man or a Superman that have been around for decades, mm-hmm. and you know, look for, it's something you've talked about in past shows, just finding that core of a character and having stories spring from that, or having it not necessarily violate that character's motivations or that character's core characteristics. And something like, you know, I'm sure you can look back at, if you picked up Deadpool now, it might not reflect the same personality that you all were working on when you were working on Deadpool. But, you know, what still should be there are a lot of those core traits and where Deadpool's coming from. It's that, again, chicken or egg. You know, how do you get into a story where you're creating a viable character that people can relate to, but you also want to have all the cool action-y superhero things that have some amount of resonance? You know, the the conflict coming from what the character's trying to get, what the motivation is, or what's standing in the way. So I don't know if there's any kind of hard and fast rule that or tips that you have as far as just even basic story construction, but is there anything that over time you kind of figured out, oh, if it lacks X, then of course it won't pay off with Y?
I think the big thing for me, and I told you I was going to bring up Tom King in this, and this is exactly where I'm going to do it, because I think Tom King is excellent at this. I think it was this particular issue that I'm going to bring up of Batman that I read that made me want to do this podcast episode.
Yeah.
Because I've been talking about doing this podcast episode for a while now. But it's an issue of it was Batman number 40. It came out like in February or something of 2018. And in it, I can't remember the big details, but in it, Batman and Wonder Woman are off in this like other plane fighting these monsters. And for them in this plane of existence, they've been there for like decades and decades and decades and decades, but in the real world, like only like 30 seconds has passed. So they're there, they're fighting all of these monsters, and you get all that action and all the superhero-ness of what they're doing. But then you also get this one page of downtime. After they won their battle, they're cooking the beast and they're like sitting and eating like normal humans. And Batman just sits there and he goes, I miss my dog. And like that, like caught me for a moment, because like, I thought that was just such a beautiful moment for painting Bruce Wayne as a human being. And as a character outside of Batman, is he's just a dude like anyone else who misses his dog. I miss my dog all the time. Like, you know, we can all relate to missing a dog or missing a brother or missing someone. Like that is one of the most basic human emotions. And, you know, for Batman to just sit there after like doing this cool battle and turning to Wonder Woman, just going, I miss my dog. And she goes, you know, like, I miss my pet too. It was just a really beautiful moment that I think, you know, reminds us that these are just people.
Yeah, the moment that has that relatable bit to it that makes all the other stuff that's before and after it have so much resonance.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like from a storytelling perspective, it sounded like it slipped in after a lot of the big showy fight, isn't this cool big comics, you know, and then in the awesome way that comics can be awesome. And then this is why, you know, this is the what. This is what lets you hang your hat on connecting to Batman and going, wow, that's devastating. Yeah, there are all those moments that you think about collectively. And as much as, you know, the payoffs are great when you see the big splash page of whatever the action is happening, you don't get there without having those smaller emotional beats to get to it.
Exactly. Like now it's the whole like, oh, he has a family he's away from. Like he has a life he's away from. He is, you know, and despite that it's only been 30 seconds in the real world, he doesn't know that and it doesn't feel like that.
Right.
And so you like, you see the sacrifice that these people are making that is larger than life and is a big deal. And, you know, I think we as people, like to read these stories about superheroes because we like to think that, you know, if we had the money or if we had the superpowers, we'd be doing these things too.
Right.
And then so to see them again miss their dogs, it just further strengthens that connection that we have with these characters. I think it's beautiful and cool and not easily done.
Yeah. I think I was going to say, to go off on a slight tangent, the Marvel films, for me, when they're successful, are the moments that have so much of that emotion. You know, where the first Captain America movie, you know, the ending with him going into the ice and the whole bit, you know, talking back and forth and just the gonna have to, you know, might not make that dance or whatever the line is. You know, those are the moments that you're like, oh, I get it. This whole thing, or all of it's predicated on this guy who's too physically. He's not the physical ideal, but he's just got that can't take no for an answer, not going to fail spirit, you know, just a kid from Brooklyn kind of attitude that you hang everything on. So when he does become the super soldier, it's just that extension of that personality.
Exactly. And then on the flip side of that, though, then you have Thor, who is this god, and he's, you know, an asshole.
Right.
And you get to see him humiliated, and you get to see him, you know, no pun intended, come back to Earth.
Right.
And you get to see him, you know, find his humanity, which I think is really cool. And that for the Marvel films. So you get to see both sides of the spectrum there.
Right. And just to have it come from something. I didn't mean to derail if you had a another springboard you were coming off of for for conflict or rather.
Oh, no, I mean, I was just also going to like give another shout out to Tom King about, again, how good he is at finding humanity in these stories, not about humans, is like his entire run on Vision.
Yeah.
Is just a question of what does it mean to be a human?
Right.
And it's told through androids, it's told through robots, like, and they're discovering what it means to be human and what it means to love and what it means to have relationships and a family. And it's this great existential story that has all the flash and bang of any superhero comic. But it's also like one of the most well-written, well-done pieces of literature on the shelves today. So yeah, like Tom King, just like, he gets how to make non-seemingly relatable characters relatable.
Right. And I know, I remember at Christmas I read all of Omega Men at my in-laws.
Yeah, that one's really good too.
And not a lot of characters that I knew. I don't know a lot of DC cosmic stuff, I guess, at times, and I knew Kyle Rayner as like the only
that's really it, the
recognizable name. But what a great story, you know. It's one of those nine panel grid, everything for the most part is told in that kind of story, and I guess it's 12 issues, it's like two volumes, and coming to the end of it is, it's that themes that you know but flipping them in a way that you haven't seen before, and to be able to dig into that and find the humanity and, you know, philosophy, et cetera, behind everything and bring it together, this crazy intergalactic war story, and all you feel, you know, to feel things and going, wow, I'm reading about the Vision making a dog and I shouldn't be feeling this way. Stop.
Right.
I've worked my life to make sure I don't have emotions just like Vision, but now he's made a family.
Yep.
Yeah, it's
and he's lost that family. And I think I was just thinking of like another one, like, you know, you look at early Spider-Man and like Ms. Marvel too, like you have these characters who are in high school and like balancing high school and family expectations and social expectations, and then I'm a superhero on top of this, like I get stressed reading those comics because, like, I definitely understand what it's like to be juggling too many plates and, you know, not sleeping enough at night and trying to make everyone happy. And the struggle, you know, the struggle is real. And, you know, I think G. Willow Wilson does a great job with that with Ms. Marvel. And Robbie Thompson wrote this great run on Spidey, which was a reinvention of Spider-Man in high school and, you know, today's day and age, where, you know, you just see Peter Parker struggle with having a crush on a girl, which is, I like, it's so humanizing, and I think it's so great, and like, this is why we love these characters, you know. As we talked about before we hit record, like, we love stories about Spider-Man, you know, yes, because web-slinging is cool and he is the best villains in the Marvel Universe, but, like, we connect to him because he's Peter Parker.
Right.
And if you forget that element, if you forget the Peter Parker element, if you forget the Bruce Wayne element, if you forget, you know, the Clark Kent element, then I feel like you lose a substantial reader base.
Right.
Because, yeah, like that's why we read these stories.
And I think that different parts of your comics creating, just like different parts of your comics reading, you're reading different stories for different reasons. And, mm-hmm. you know, so much of the Spider-Man example is so true for me, because that was my in comics when I was a kid, was Spider-Man, because mm-hmm. he was on the Electric Company and there was an issue of Transformers that crossed over with Spider-Man, and that was crazy. And I was like, Spider-Man's in comics. And then from there, it was all those connecting points that you said. And even now, the trailer for the animated Into the Spider-Verse, mm-hmm. when I realized that they were showing a Peter Parker in there that had gray hair, like that was mm-hmm. one of those, oh my God, they're showing a streak of gray in Peter Parker. I have a streak of gray in my...
Right.
It's such a basic thing at the end of the day where you go, look at how they're pushing and pulling. And obviously, you know, they're putting in Spider-Gwen and Miles Morales, and those characters are going to be relatable to different people in different ways. Mm-hmm. And it just opens up everything in such a, you know, now we're having all these characters play off of each other with their bits of humanity and their motivations coming from where they're coming from, and the age differences and the background differences and, mm-hmm. you know, why they want what. And you just mash it together, excuse me, into what, you know, at least by the trailer, looks like this great story of all these personalities coming together to do something cool and adventure-y and fun, and we have to fix time or time and space, whatever we're going to do, we're going to go right into the Spider-Verse. But it was such a nice end to go, oh, he does have gray hair.
Right. No, and I think, like, not to toot my own horn for my contributions to the Marvel Universe, but so one of the things I get asked all the time is, you know, why do I think Gwenpool took off as well as she did and as quickly as she did, especially considering she's not, you know, like she didn't debut in a Spider-Man comic, right? She didn't debut in a big comic. And my response always is because she's one of us. She's a fan. She's a hardcore fan of comics. And, you know, she woke up one day in the Marvel Universe. What do you do? And, like, I feel like we've all had those daydreams of, man, oh, if I could be a superhero, oh, if I was living in the Marvel Universe, what would I do? Like, she is literally wish-fulfilling everyone's, every comic fan's fantasy. And it's not as easy as we think it would be. And so, like, again, like, that's a very, like, relatable human thing. What would you do if you woke up one day in the Marvel Universe?
Yeah.
And you get to see both sides of that. You get to see her decide to be a superhero, and you get to see her brother try and just live a normal life. And neither is easy. So, yeah, like, I don't know. I think that's why comic stories have grown and gotten a lot better over the years, is people have figured out that it's the humanity of these superhumans that people like. Yes, we like to see them punching villains, and yes, we like to see them shoot lasers out of their eyes because that's cool. I'm not denying that. But most importantly, we like to see ourselves in these characters too.
Right. Right, it's what's reflected back, and it is. It does seem like it's always those beats. Those give a chance for your audience to breathe and maybe reacclimate themselves to what's going on, or just bring back that motivation mm-hmm. to the forefront to say, "This is why. This is why I'm doing this," or "These are my problems," and therefore, and then whenever we get to the other end. Wow, I think. You know, it's one of those topics I feel like you could pick a character if you're a fan of and start to deconstruct some motivation and deconstruct, you know, the whys and wherefores of anything that the character is trying to do. And it, mm-hmm. it can be a fun exercise. I know when I first started writing comics, just to go back and look at comics that I loved and figure out basic story structure and character structure, you know, character arc within that structure, and just to try to figure out what was the intention really helped me to get a better sense of not just how to construct that story, but how to pace it, how to think about payoff, how to think about, you know, Dark Knight is 4 issues. Okay, what happened over the course of those 4 issues?
Mm-hmm.
And just to, and there's so much, you know, I picked things that there was a lot of information, you know, other people ruminating on, but I think that that can go so far into thinking about how to make your own comics as taking apart stuff that you like or stuff that's often referenced as, you know, a milestone and, mm-hmm. And then finding the stuff that might not have, you know, that you love that might not have the same audience, I think can go a long way. And the, you know, the plus side of social media is when you can interact with creators like a Tom King and, or they'll talk about why they did something or maybe promote an interview with, you know, online or print to say, hey, go check me out here talking about why I'm doing this with Mr. Miracle. And mm-hmm. you can get the backstory and behind the scenes to go, oh, this is why it's all come together like this.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, one of the tasks I always, when I'm doing coaching with writers, is I always tell them, like, you know, read the stuff that you like and really analyze why you like it.
Yeah.
You know, like pick a scene and why does that scene resonate with you? Why does it work? And then on the flip side, also read something you don't like.
Right.
And really analyze, why don't I like this? Why doesn't this work? And that's how you find these little things, like the finding the humanity in superheroes that really stick out.
I think we have covered this well for a podcast where we're trying to make it a bite-sized tip and tricks podcast. I know what at times we talk about making these short, but I like them when they're not short. I think there's a lot of different ways to explore a lot of different topics, and this is one that I hadn't really considered until you brought it up, and I'm glad that we were able to talk through it because there's a lot going on behind the scenes, a lot going on behind the eyes in most characters, or at least there should be. The course that you can go through Comics Experience is Kickstarting Your Comic, a Comics Experience micro course, and that is November 9th with Heather, and you can find Heather at Heather Antos on Twitter, and she's also heatherantos.com. Heather, anything else? I know you had just done your marathon multiple convention circuit. Anything else that you can talk about that's coming out? We didn't talk about this ahead of time. I don't know if you have any...
Redlands, the new arc of Redlands that I'm editing is out. Issue 7 is already on sale, so you can pick that out. It's the first issue of the second arc. Issue 8 will be out in 2 weeks, I think. And then Bitterroot number 1 will be coming out on November 15th by David Walker, Sanford Green, Rico Renzi. It's awesome. Check it out. Read some comics, y'all.
Yeah, read some comics. Bitterroot is one of those where you read the synopsis, you go, oh yeah, this totally should be a thing. It's seriously, it's one of those, like, your forehead slapping, like, oh, of course, this makes such total sense to be a concept.
Yeah, yeah, it's super fun. I'm very excited. Very, very excited to see how people like it. For those, I guess I'll do a little spit. It's 1920s, the Harlem Renaissance, and there's a family that's basically fighting supernatural forces threatening to destroy humanity. And basically, these supernatural forces are, if you're an angry and hateful person, it turns you into a monster.
So Bitterroot.
Yep.
Well, if you have anything you'd like to hear talked about on the show, and we will certainly talk as much Tom King as you'd like, you can tweet at Comic Experience, and you can email info@comicsexperience.com. I will be happy to talk about the Sheriff of Baghdad, and I'm trying to think of another Tom King title. Why did I blank on them all?
Omega Man, Mr. Miracle,
Omega Vision, Man, Mr. Miracle, Vision,
Batman. There's... Let's talk about Batman and Elmer Fudd, all right?
Oh,
that's
boy.
What we'll talk about next time.
How crazy is that? That's one of those things that you hear there's going to be crossover between Hanna-Barbera characters, and you go, okay. And then you hear who's doing it. I feel like there's been so many times, though, in life that you hear that there's going to be a thing, and then you see the thing, that at this point you should know at least enough to see who the creative team is and to go, you know what, that's going to be fine, or I'm really intrigued by it. Because I still remember a guy years ago was like, a movie about Facebook. And then after The Social Network came out, you know, he's the same guy who was rushing to praise that there's a good movie called Social Network. But yeah, Batman Elmer Fudd, that it really shouldn't be that good.
It's honestly one of the best one shots I've ever read. Yeah. So,
and that's Lee Weeks, right? That's
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Gosh.
This is the plugging Tom King episode of Comics Experience. I feel like he owes us money now.
That's right. Or maybe a guest spot in whatever is going to be the next Batman crossover, Batman Yosemite Sam, if that's not already happened. Just in the background at the bar, at the saloon. I'll take that. All right. Well, until next time, keep making comics.